You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Stories of the Day. My name is Rakesh Sharma. Today is the 24th of May 2019. We now have a clear picture of what happened in the elections. Well, the NDA is back for a second term. You may have heard of it, but we also now know that the Odisha Assembly results are properly out. The BJD, that is the Biju Janata Dal, has won 112 seats, the BJP 23 seats and the Congress 9 seats. And that also means Naveen Patnaik is back as the Chief Minister of Odisha. And in another update, the Karnataka government is reportedly on the brink after the Congress-JDS combine failed to consolidate a significant number of votes in the state here in Karnataka, even though former Chief Minister and Congress leader Siddaramaiah has ensured that there is no threat to the government. An informal cabinet meeting has been called to take stock of election results, incumbent Deputy Chief G. Parameshwara said. In the press briefing, he said that all MLAs are together and there is no threat to the state government. So things are happening, but there are several things also happening outside of electoral politics. And that is precisely what we like to cover each day here. This is Stories of the Day. My name is Rakesh Sharma and you're listening to Money Control.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
But first, let's do a quick roundup of where we are. The NDA is ahead in about 353 of the 542 seats, while the BJP has already comfortably crossed 300. In 2014, as we might recall, the party itself had won 282 seats and the NDA had won 336, so they've improved their account both as a party and as a coalition. If in 2014 it was the first time in more than three decades that a single party had won a majority of its own, now Prime Minister Modi has emulated Indira Gandhi in being re-elected also with a majority to a single party. Rahul Gandhi, Congress President, has congratulated Prime Minister Modi and has asked him to take care of the interests of the country. He also conceded defeat in Amethi, asking BJP leader Smriti Irani there to nurture the constituency with love. And Rahul Gandhi has also offered to resign as President of the Congress in the face of having received such a drubbing, although it has been speculated that the party is unlikely to accept his resignation. The BJP had a clean sweep in the states of Gujarat, Delhi and Rajasthan. In Bihar, the coalition has won 39 of the 40 seats, with the single other seat going to the Indian National Congress. And in case of Maharashtra, the coalition there between the BJP and the Shiv Sena have won 41 seats, with the NCP gaining 4 and the Congress gaining 1, and the other two seats split between an independent and AIMIM. In Madhya Pradesh, which actually elected a Congress government only recently for the assembly, 28 out of the 29 seats have been won by the BJP. So in short, this has been an emphatic, undeniable victory to the BJP, the NDA, and most importantly, Narendra Modi. In Andhra Pradesh, the YSR Congress is set to come to power, decimating the ruling Telugu Desam Party and Chandrababu Naidu. In the other interesting states where the BJP has made significant inroads, TMC does have a lead. It has won 22 seats, whereas the BJP has won a whopping 18 seats, with the Congress only winning 2 seats there in Bengal. Down south is where there has been a resistance to the BJP wave. The DMK has won 23 seats, International Congress 8 seats, CPI and CPM 2 each. The AIADMK has 1 seat, and the BJP has failed to make a dent in Tamil Nadu, winning no seats. So that in summary is what has taken place in the country. The BJP's lotus is now properly blooming in the east, West Bengal and Odisha being prime examples, but the lotus and saffron have been resisted in Kerala and Tamil Nadu. The Congress, meanwhile, can boast of Punjab, where it has won 8 seats. Shiromani Akali Dal has 2, BJP has 2, and the Aam Aadmi Party has won 1 seat in Punjab. Well, victory done. Who gets what now is the big question. According to a report on Business Standard, Amit Shah, who has debuted in the Lok Sabha, could join the Cabinet Committee on Security of the second Modi government, sources have told Business Standard. Apart from the Prime Minister, the CCS, that is the Cabinet Committee on Security, comprises the top four of the government, that is Defence, Home, External Affairs and Finance Ministries. So one of these could be Amit Shah's. In fact, in Gujarat, Amit Shah had served as Home Minister in the governments led by Modi there. But Rajnath Singh, who has come back to power from his Lucknow seat, has been the Home Minister in the first Modi government. Will that change during Modi 2.0? It remains to be seen. Of the other portfolios within the CCS, there is Defence. Nirmala Sitharaman has been Defence Minister. Will she continue to be? We don't know. Railway Minister Piyush Goyal has proved to be an extremely competent crisis manager for the BJP, and when Arun Jaitley was missing in action due to health concerns, also handled the finance portfolio. So he is likely to get a more high-profile portfolio, which brings us to Arun Jaitley. What of Mr. Jetley. He was discharged from New Delhi's AIIMS on Thursday, and as a result of these health issues, didn't even attend the party's victory celebrations. So given these challenges, will he continue to be in the finance ministry or any ministry at all is also a question that is being asked. He had undergone surgery in the US on the 22nd of January for a reported soft tissue cancer in his left leg, because of which he hadn't been able to present the Modi government's sixth and final budget of this term, which also brings us to external affairs. Sushma Swaraj, as we know, had decided not to contest the polls, and currently she is not a member of either the Rajya Sabha or the Lok Sabha. So who gets external affairs is another question. And Smriti Irani, who currently handles textiles ministry, has given Rahul Gandhi, the president of the Congress, a huge blow, defeating him in Amethi. So she is also another contender for a big portfolio. Now, in the newly elected 17th Lok Sabha, there are 78 women members of parliament, 78 women MPs, which is the highest number seen since independence. According to PRS Legislative Research, parliament this time has 300 first-time MPs and 197 MPs who have been re-elected for a second consecutive term. Out of the 716 women candidates who contested elections, 78 have been elected, that is 14% of the House. This is higher than 2014, when there were 62 women MPs in the House, so that's an addition of 16 new women MPs. In other statistics related to the new Lok Sabha, the average age of the MP in this Lok Sabha is 54 years, even as 12% of the MPs in the House are actually below 40. 43% MPs have at least graduate level education, 25% are postgraduates, and 4% have doctorates. Well, with stories of jubilation for the BJP aside, it's time to turn to a very sad story which is still evolving. 19 students have been killed after a massive fire broke out at a coaching center in Gujarat's Surat on Friday afternoon. Videos recorded by witnesses on social media showed several students jumping out of the windows on the top floor of the building to escape the blaze. Most of the students are said to be between the ages of 14 and 17. The fire, which broke out around 3:30 p.m., engulfed the top floors of the multi-story commercial building called Takshashila Complex in the Sarthana area of Surat, officials have said. It is not immediately clear what has caused the fire. An investigation has been ordered into the incident, and the state government has promised to give 4 lakh rupees to each of the families of those killed. This is also putting in focus fire safety in the country. If we go by government data, in 2015 alone, more than 17,000 people died in fires, one of the largest causes of accidental death in the country. Turning very quickly to the Jet Airways revival process and whether or not it may happen, it may not come about anytime soon, as negotiations between Etihad and the Hinduja Group regarding joint ownership of the carrier has hit a dead end, according to a report by Business Standard. Money Control has not been able to independently verify the story. Executives from the Hinduja Group and Etihad met on the 23rd of May in Abu Dhabi to work out the contours of the deal. Officials from State Bank of India were also at the meeting. The source has told Business Standard, and I quote, "No decision has been taken regarding the partnership. The Hinduja Group is uncertain about making any investment in Jet. Initial talks are still underway. It is unlikely that they will translate into an investment," unquote. A meeting between executives from Jet Airways and Etihad may take place next week. A consortium of lenders to Jet Airways, led by the State Bank of India, invited bids for 76% stake in the cash-strapped airline. The only bid they received was Etihad's, but it was conditional and forced the banks to look at other options. SBI Capital, the advisor to the SBI in this process, approached many conglomerates in India as well as the government's National Investment and Infrastructure Fund for Jet. The lenders have been approaching unsolicited bidders as well, but they, along with Etihad, seem to have reservations about their financial status as well as managerial experience. Many Indian and foreign entities like Darwin Platform Group and UK-based upstart Jason Unsworth had shown interest, but they have not been shortlisted by the banks as their bids came in after the deadline. The Hinduja story is the latest addition in who might be able to lend a helping hand to Jet. Let's not also forget that the world of business and finance is still thrumming. Ashok Leyland quarter four net has dipped 12% at 653 crore rupees. The company had posted a profit of 743.12 crore rupees for the same period of 2017-2018. Bata India quarter four profit, meanwhile, has jumped 69.47%, almost 70%, to 88.26 crore rupees. The company's board has recommended a dividend of 6 rupees 25 paise per equity share. JSW Steel quarter four net profit, meanwhile, has dipped almost 50% at 48% to 1,495 crore rupees as input costs have bitten the company. Consolidated revenue during the January to March quarter stayed flat at 19,264 crore rupees against the year ago period. Crude steel production actually fell 3% year on year to 4.17 million tons during January to March, as opposed to 4.31 million tons last year. And in other earnings results, Grasim Industries' quarter four net profit stood at 1,531.86 crore rupees. Wellspun India posted a quarter four loss of 78.43 crore rupees. Whirlpool India quarter four net up 14% at 104 crore rupees. After the NDA's return and the thumping approval that the stock markets had for this return, the question everybody is asking is, which are the top stock picks? And to help you out, we give you a few names from four brokerage houses. Motilal Oswal Financial Services have these as their top picks in the large cap section: ICICI Bank, State Bank of India, Maruti Suzuki, Ultratech, L&T, Titan, Bharti Airtel, Coal India, Infosys and HDFC Life. In the mid-cap space, which is expected to boom after the return, Federal Bank, LIC Housing Finance, Indian Hotels, Siemens, Aditya Birla, Crompton Consumer, Ashok Buildcon, Jindal Steel Power and Godrej Agrovet. These are the mid-cap picks that Motilal Oswal has given. Kotak Institutional Equities also has some large-cap picks. They are Tata Steel, HDFC, ONGC, Mahindra & Mahindra, State Bank of India, L&T, coming up again, ICICI Bank, Bajaj Finserv, Infosys, Tech Mahindra and Reliance Industries. Midcap, the brokerage remains positive on midcap stocks in automobiles and components, banking, capital goods and a few other sectors. So some names that pop up there: Mahindra and Mahindra Finance, Federal Bank, Equitas Holdings, Escorts, Tata Power and others. Prabhudas Leeladhar has some large cap picks for you: HDFC Bank once again, ICICI Bank once again, Titan and L&T once again. So these are some repeating names across these brokerage houses. Hindustan Unilever, UPL and Petronet also are some large caps that Prabhudas Leeladhar thinks are good picks in this time. Midcap, Ashok Leyland, Shriram Transport, IDFC First Bank, Jubilant Foodworks, among others. Elara Capital has some large cap picks for you: Britannia, HDFC, Hindustan Unilever, Maruti Suzuki, Reliance Industries, TCS and Ultratech Cement. Midcap space, Ashok Leyland pops up again: Exide, Gujarat State Petronet, KEC International, Shree Cement, Supreme Industries, among others. These names were picked up by Mint, and those were the opinions of Motilal Oswal, Kotak Institutional Equities, Prabhudas Leeladhar and Elara Capital. These are not the views of Money Control. We're just broadcasting the views of these brokerage houses. In a quick roundup of what else is happening in the rest of the world, Donald Trump visits Japan. The US president will be the first foreign leader to meet the new emperor, Naruhito. As Time magazine reported, the visit is expected to feature more steak, sumo and fighter jets than actual policy, as Japan is still trying to avoid a bubbling over of trade tensions. If some of you think that nationalism is on the rise here in India, well, fear not. There are several people who share the same concern in several different countries. The European Union chooses a new European Parliament this weekend amid a rise in nationalism and populism across the bloc and, of course, the ongoing drama over Brexit and immigration. Results will be announced on Sunday night. In big news coming out of all of that Brexit drama, Theresa May, facing a cabinet revolt and a parliamentary rebellion, has decided to step down as Conservative Party leader on the 7th of June, but remain as Prime Minister until a successor is picked, which could of course take weeks or even months considering how the Conservative Party is split at the moment. But the favourite happens to be the Donald Trump of the United Kingdom, King of the Fopa and Emperor of Bad Haircuts, Boris Johnson. In a very quick roundup of what's happening in the trade war situation, Trump has said, quote, "I can imagine Huawei being included in a US-China trade deal." Now, China, meanwhile, has denounced US rumors and lies about Huawei ties to Beijing. Hong Kong-based Lenovo, which is also another giant from the region, has said they are well prepared if the US is going to slap more tariffs on China. Meanwhile, a shipping giant has warned of considerable uncertainties as trade tensions continue to rise. Maersk, which is the world's largest container shipping company, said it still expects 2019 EBITDA of $5 billion, but they have said they're still facing considerable uncertainties due to the trade tensions. As we know, President Donald Trump has unexpectedly accused China of reneging on a deal earlier this month and announced that tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods would increase to 25% from 10% on the 10th of May. Beijing, of course, retaliated, raising levies on $60 billion worth of US products. In the last 2 weeks, the Trump administration has put Huawei on a blacklist, which prevents it from buying from American companies without the US government's permission. We know also that the trade war has started involving Google and possibly even Microsoft. So it's been a difficult time when it comes to the trade war situation for well over a year now, but these few weeks in the past have been particularly tricky. In more international news, WikiLeaks leader Julian Assange, currently in jail in the United Kingdom and fighting extradition to the United States and Sweden, is now facing more trouble. The US has filed 17 new charges against Julian Assange, this time accusing him of obtaining and publishing secret government documents. The Department of Justice's decision, this is the US Department of Justice's decision to charge him under the Espionage Act, has free press advocates worried. When is it whistleblowing and when is it essentially espionage? It's going to be an interesting time for free speech in these times. Speaking of free speech and free expression of one's identity, Taiwan has held its first gay marriages. Lots of same-sex couples began tying the knot just a week after lawmakers there ushered in marriage equality, capping years of political wrangling and cementing Taiwan's status as the vanguard of gay rights in Asia, the very first Asian country to do this, and indeed also as a strong rebuke to how they're different from mainland China. So in a lot of ways, it is symbolic and significant that Taiwan has allowed for gay marriages to take place. And activists are, of course, saying that the fight is not over because some transnational couples still aren't able to marry there. And in more good news coming out from another continent, Brazil has criminalized homophobia and transphobia. The country's top court voted to extend anti-discrimination protections to LGBT people amid a spike in attacks against the community since the far-right president Bolsonaro, a self-described homophobe, began his campaign last year. Speaking of despicable people in the mold of Bolsonaro, Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein has reached a tentative $44 million deal with his accusers. The Guardian has reported that the agreement would resolve lawsuits and compensate the Hollywood producer's alleged victims. In fact, the Wall Street Journal broke this story and the Guardian reported about that story. More than 15 lawsuits have, of course, been filed accusing Weinstein or his company Weinstein & Co. of misconduct. The settlement would cover many of them, including a class action by alleged victims and a suit by the New York Attorney General. He, of course, is still facing criminal charges of rape and performing a forcible sex act, but he is, of course, denied all allegations of non-consensual sex. As we might remember, it was his case which truly launched the Me Too movement, which has led to dozens of powerful men in entertainment, politics, and other fields being accused of sexual misconduct, a movement that also made its presence felt here in India, where we're seeing the trial of MJ Akbar as we speak. Will it have the same kind of impact in India? Is, of course, anybody's guess, but if I had to take a guess, I'm just going to go right ahead and say no. In some other interesting news from around the world and indeed the universe, a 1 mile wide asteroid is passing by Earth. This rock even has its own moon. It's that big. It's about a mile wide. And it is flying by this year at a safe distance of 3.2 million miles from the Earth. Speaking of millions and billions, there is evidence now of a billion-year-old fungus which has turned up in the Canadian Arctic. Now, this fossil that they've discovered is about twice as old as the previous record holder, which was about 450 million years old. And now we have a billion-year-old fungus. And finally, Quartz has reported that pop music, which, you know, is supposed to make you happy, etc., is increasingly exploring the ideas of depression and anxiety. In fact, even the words have started appearing more these days in pop and hip-hop music. So essentially, pop and hip-hop are exploring, well, the blues. In the 1960s and 70s, when peace was such a dominant theme in pop music, largely due to what was happening in Vietnam and as a response to it, you know, Woodstock and so on, the usage of the word peace has apparently declined in pop music these days. So, well, as Quartz said it, pop music is singing the blues. Before I let you go, what happened in the stock market today? Ignoring muted global cues, benchmark indices reclaimed crucial resistance levels today. The final tally read something like this. The BSE Sensex closed 623 points higher at 39,434, while the Nifty 50 rose 187 points to end at 11,844 today. Significantly, India Volatility Index has cooled off, which is a positive sign for the bulls and the suggestion that the rally is likely to continue. That's it for the week. We have come to the end of the great tamasha, that is the Indian elections. Modi 2.0 is upon us, and there are several promises that the administration has to keep. A majority of the country has voted for them. A significant number has not voted for them. The challenge remains to not only live up to the promises they have made to the people who voted for them, but also to listen to those people who did not vote for them. Because Narendra Modi is the Prime Minister of the country. Narendra Modi is not simply the Prime Minister of those people who voted for the NDA. Here is a fervent hope and prayer that the Prime Minister bears that in mind. Congratulations to the winning candidates and the winning party. Congratulations to the Prime Minister, and all the best to us all. Do write into us, mcpodcast@nw18.com, and have a fantastic weekend.
This has been a Money Control presentation.